Welcome back to the deep dive. Usually when we sit down here, we're trying to wrap our heads around something massive.
Right, the big heavy concept.
Exactly, like the future of AI or the shifting sands of global supply chains, ancient history, big stuff. But today, I want to do the exact opposite. I want to zoom in on something so small, so microscopic, really, that most of you listening probably do it completely on autopilot.
Which is fascinating because it's often the things we do on autopilot that have the most interesting hidden structures, isn't it?
Absolutely. We are talking about shopping. And I don't mean, the economics of retail or shifting consumer
You
trends.
mean the actual interpersonal part?
Yeah, the actual awkward human interaction of walking into a physical store and buying a thing. Because let's be honest, half the time I walk into a shop now, I'm just hoping I don't have to talk to a single
Oh,
person.
same here.
I just want to, get my stuff, tap my card, and vanish into the night.
Which really is the modern way. We basically treat the physical shop as a giant vending machine that we can just walk inside of. But historically, and from a sociological standpoint, that interaction is supposed to be a highly structured dance.
And that is exactly what we are looking at today. We have pulled a really fascinating source document. It's called The Master Architect of Formal Commerce Dialogue.
It is quite a title.
It really is. Specifically, we're focusing on a section titled Shop Conversations, a formal guide. And I mean, just hearing that, it sounds like something from a completely different century, doesn't it? The Master Architect.
It does, yeah. It sounds a bit like a secret society manual or a Victorian etiquette book.
Yeah.
But what's so interesting about this text is that it views a conversation in a shop not as a casual chat, but as a rigid protocol.
A very strict protocol.
Exactly. It treats the whole interaction as a professional negotiation of needs and services. It provides this linear narrative that turns a mundane shopping trip into almost a formal diplomatic mission.
It's essentially a blueprint. And our mission today is to break down the four specific stages of a shop conversation exactly as defined by this master architect. Because the language here is quite elevated.
Very elevated.
It's extremely specific. It's all about maintaining a quote-unquote professional tone. And as I was reading through this, I realized it breaks the whole experience down into basically a four-ad structure.
Right, you've got greeting, inquiring, pricing, and concluding.
It's a four-act play for buying a loaf of bread or a pair of shoes.
And the underlying argument the master architect makes is that by following this structure, by consciously using this elevated language, you actually change the entire nature of the transaction.
How so?
Well, you stop being just a consumer and you become a patron. And the person behind the counter stops being just a worker and becomes a purveyor.
A purveyor. I love that word. So let's test this theory out. Because I read through this formal guide, and some of these lines are, well, they're intense.
They definitely demand attention.
Yeah, and I want to see if this actually holds up in real life, or if trying this just makes you sound like a robot. So let's jump right in. Phase one, the greeting and initial interaction.
The grand entrance. This is essentially where the social contract is signed.
Right. So in my normal life, I walk in, maybe I make eye contact, nod, maybe I say hey, but the guide explicitly states that is insufficient. It offers three very specific opening lines for the customer to use. Good morning, good afternoon, or hello.
It's deceptively simple, isn't it?
It is, because I mean, hello is basic, but think about the actual difference between a silent nod and a distinct, clear good morning.
Right, a nod is just an acknowledgement of space. You're saying, I see you exist in this room, but saying good morning is an acknowledgement of presence. You are initiating a formal verbal interface.
Okay, fair enough. But where it gets really interesting for me is the script it gives for the salesperson's role. If I walk into a store today, like a hip clothing store or something, the person usually says, what's up? Or finding everything okay. It's super
Super
casual.
casual, yeah.
This guide absolutely hates casual.
It certainly does. The guide suggests the salesperson should exclusively use phrases like, can I help you or may I assist you? And then it has this heavy hitter, how can I be of service?
How can I be of service? I mean, that phrase literally stopped me in my tracks when I read it.
It's powerful.
It feels like I've just walked into a grand manor house and I'm being addressed by the head butler. It creates a weird amount of pressure, doesn't it?
It does create pressure, but I would argue it's a very productive kind of pressure. Think about that word, service.
Yeah.
In the modern retail economy, we as customers often feel like inconvenience to the staff, like we are interrupting their stocking duties or their phone
Although
scrolling.
total, you feel bad just asking a question.
Right. So when someone stands there and asks, how can I be of service? They are explicitly stating their utility in that moment. They're literally saying, I am here for you.
It creates almost a debt. Like, if they offer me service, I can't just be loitering around anymore.
You need a mission.
Exactly. I need a mission. I can't answer. How can I be of service with, oh, I'm just looking at the pretty colors.
No, it elevates the room. It demands that you, the customer, actually have a purpose.
Right.
And that leads directly into the customer's scripted response. The guide tells us exactly how to answer that offer.
Right. It suggests starting with, yes, please, and then moving into, I'm looking for, or the one that really caught my eye, could you show me?
Yes, could you show me?
I want to dig into that specific phrase, asking for help, because usually I just ask, do you have whatever, or where is the milk? Asking, could you show me, feels, I don't know, it feels a little needy.
See, I don't think it's needy at all. I actually think it's about leadership.
Leadership. How so?
Well, if you ask where's the milk, you're basically asking for geographical coordinates. You're asking for data so you can go do the work yourself.
True.
But if you ask, could you show me, you are actively inviting them to guide you. You are assigning them a task.
So you're saying it's kind of a power move?
In a very polite, structured way, yes. It establishes a relationship where they are the expert guide and you are the esteemed guest. You're asking for their expertise and their physical time, not just their inventory map. It shifts the entire dynamic from a self-checkout mindset to a personal shopper experience immediately.
I can actually see that. It forces a real interaction because you can't just point a finger from behind the counter if someone formally asks to be shown something. You physically have to walk with them.
Exactly.
So, okay, we've walked in, we've established the relationship. I am the guest, they are the guide. Now we transition into phase two, inquiring about products.
Finding the actual item. This is the meat of the interaction. And this is where the vocabulary of the Master Architect Guide gets incredibly precise about logistics.
You're talking about the distinct difference it draws between having an item and stocking an item.
Precisely.
So instead of just asking, do you have this, the guide suggests the formal phrase, could you tell me if you stock, and then the item.
Could you tell me if you stock?
To me, using the word stock sounds like I'm a tax auditor or a supply chain inspector. Do you stock this item? It feels a little cold.
It is colder,
yeah.
But it's also much more competent. Think about the nuance there. Do you have, this could mean, is there one sitting on the counter right now or is there one in your pocket? It's vague.
Right.
But asking, do you stock this, refers to the broader system.
Yeah.
It refers to the supply chain.
So you're appealing to the catalog, not just the physical room you're standing in.
Exactly. When you use the word stock, you're signaling to the salesperson that you fundamentally understand this is a business. It has a back room, it has inventory cycles, it has a vendor catalog. You aren't just looking for a random object, you're inquiring about their business capabilities.
And that commands a different level of respect.
Because you are speaking in the language of the retailer.
It definitely sounds more professional. Like if I go into a local hardware store and ask, hey, do you guys have 3/4-inch screws? That's one thing. If I walk up and say, could you tell me if you stock 3/4-inch screws? It sounds like I might be about to buy 5,000 of them.
Exactly. It signals serious intent.
And
once you've successfully established that they do indeed stock the item, the guide moves us to the next hurdle, which is decision making.
Which is honestly my absolute nightmare, standing in front of a massive wall of wine or toothpaste or headphones and having absolutely no idea what to pick.
Choice paralysis.
It's the worst. And usually if I actually swallow my pride and ask for help, I just get a non-committal shrug. But the formal guide gives us three very distinct ways to seek recommendations, and I love how strategic they are.
They are brilliantly tailored to extract three very different types of information from the guide. The first one is, what would you recommend?
So that's the personal appeal.
Yes. You are asking the salesperson to step out of their corporate role for a second and give you their subjective personal opinion. What do you actually like? It builds a quick rapport.
But then you also have the second option. What's popular here?
Which is the wisdom of the crowd approach.
Yeah.
By asking that, you're essentially saying, look, I don't trust my own taste and I don't necessarily know you well enough to trust yours, but I do trust the sales data. What is everybody else buying?
It's the safe bet. Nobody gets fired for buying what's popular.
Right.
But the third option, this is the one that I think is the most useful and honestly the most intimidating. Which one is the best quality?
That is the ultimate challenge question.
It feels like throwing down a gauntlet. You are really putting them on the spot.
You are. Because popular is a very easy question to answer. You just point to the shelf that's mostly empty.
Mm-hmm.
Recommended is easy too. You just point to whatever you personally bought last week.
Mm.
But asking for best quality demands an objective assessment of value.
Right. You're asking them to judge the construction, the materials, the actual durability of the product.
And it essentially forces them to be completely honest with you. If I ask what's popular, they can totally sell me the cheap, trendy piece of plastic. But if I ask which is best quality, and they intentionally sell me junk, they have fundamentally lied to me.
Which breaks that formal contract we've established. It holds them totally accountable. So by deliberately choosing which of these three questions to ask, you, the customer, are directing the salesperson on exactly how to sell to you.
You set the criteria for the entire transaction. It's a very subtle, formal way of taking complete control of the conversation.
It completely stops the generic sales pitch before it even starts. Don't tell me what's cool. Tell me what lasts. I really like that approach.
It's incredibly effective.
Okay, so we found the item. It is in stock. It is of the highest quality. Now we have to do the part that everyone always gets weird about. Phase three, discussing prices and payment.
Yes, the pivot to the money. It's so funny how visibly uncomfortable we get about this part in modern society. We lower our voices, we fumble blindly for our cards, we try to pretend the actual financial exchange isn't happening.
Yeah,
we really do. We act like it's just a friendly gift exchange that coincidentally involves a credit card reader.
Exactly.
But the master architect says absolutely not. The guide keeps this very direct but polite. The formal ways to request the price are just how much is, or what's the cost of, or could you tell me the price of? There are no euphemisms here.
Absolute clarity is the goal. But I strongly suspect you want to talk about the verification step next, because that is easily the most controversial part of this entire section.
Oh, we absolutely have to talk about the verification step. The guide suggests that after the salesperson tells you the price, you shouldn't just blindly hand over your money.
No. You must confirm the total.
You should say, and I am quoting this directly, am I correct in understanding that it's, and then you repeat the exact price back to them.
Am I correct in understanding?
I mean, come on, just picture it. If I'm buying a bagel and a coffee, and the guy says that's $8, and I look him in the eye and say, am I correct in understanding that it is $8? I sound like I'm wearing a wire. I sound like a federal agent.
It is incredibly formal, yes. And I'll grant you, in a local bodega, it borders on the absurd. But you have to think about the broader context of formal commerce.
Okay.
If you were buying a car, if you were negotiating a massive contract for home renovations, if you're at a jeweler buying a diamond.
Okay, yes. In those specific high-stakes contexts, sure.
That phrase, am I correct in understanding, acts as a verbal contract seal. It intentionally creates a pause in the momentum. It forces both parties to look at the number together and formally agree. It completely eliminates that awful, oh, I thought you said 15, not 50 moment.
Because it's essentially a built-in safety mechanism.
It is. It rigorously protects you from ambiguity. And in any kind of high-stakes commerce, ambiguity is incredibly expensive. The guide is trying to train us to treat every single transaction with that baseline level of seriousness.
So scale it down.
Right. Maybe you don't use those exact words for the morning bagel, but the habit of verbally verifying value before paying is a very powerful one to cultivate.
I guess that's fair. It actively prevents that shock at the register where you've already tapped your card. It beeps. And then you look at the receipt and realize you just paid double what you thought it cost.
Exactly.
It forces a real-life confirm purchase button. So the price is verified. Then we have the actual exchange of funds. The script says, here you are, presenting the money. They say, thank you. And then the customer's line is, keep the change.
Keep the change.
Now, obviously, this implies physical cash, which is becoming pretty rare. But even just conceptually, there is something so fascinating about that specific phrase, because it's not just saying, I don't want to carry these heavy coins.
No, it's definitely a power dynamic again. It's a flourish.
It feels a little bit like largesse, doesn't it? Like you're the wealthy lord of the manor, casually tossing a gold coin to the local commoner.
There's a slight air of noblesse oblige to it, certainly. But I think it's mostly about efficiency signaling. By saying keep the change, it says, my time is fundamentally more valuable than these copper discs.
Ooh.
It creates a very clean, decisive exit. You are closing the financial ledger right there with a small bonus. It firmly positions you as that benevolent patron we talked about at the very beginning.
I have to say, it definitely feels a lot better than standing there staring at an iPad screen spinning around, awkwardly asking you for a 20, 25, or 30% tip for a single muffin.
A very modern dilemma.
Yeah, keep the change feels like you are fully in control of your own generosity, rather than being algorithmically guilt-tripped into it.
That is a brilliant point. Keep the change is voluntary, it's active. The digital tip screen is passive and highly pressured. The entire master architect philosophy is about active, conscious engagement.
So the money has changed hands. The transaction is technically over, but the interaction isn't. And this brings us to phase four, concluding the conversation. And honestly, looking back over it, this might be the most important part of the whole guide.
It really is. The exit determines the entire lasting impression of the interaction.
The guide lists three tiers of expressing gratitude. First is just thank you, which is basic. Then there's thanks for your assistance, which is much more formal. And then the third one is I appreciate your help.
I absolutely love it. I appreciate your help. It is fundamentally different from a standard thank you.
How so? Like, what's the nuance there?
Well, thank you is very often directed merely at the situation or the object itself. You hand me the bag, I say thank you, I got my thing.
Right.
But when you say I appreciate your help, that gratitude is directed specifically at the labor. It formally acknowledges that this human being exerted effort on your behalf.
Oh, I see. It perfectly connects back to the very beginning of the loop.
Exactly.
They initiated it by asking, how can I be of service? You ask them to step up and show you the stock. And now you are closing that loop by saying, I acknowledge that service.
You're validating their role as the expert guide. It humanizes them right at the very moment you are walking away. It says, I saw what you did there, and it had real value to me.
And then we get to the final sign-offs, the farewells. We have goodbye, which is standard. Have a nice day, classic. And then the one that really stood out to me from the text, take care.
Take care is such a fascinating inclusion in what is otherwise a strictly formal guide.
It feels surprisingly intimate to me. Like, I say take care to my close friends. I say it to my family when I hang up the phone. Saying it to a random shop assistant feels almost like a breach of that professional distance we've spent the last three phases meticulously building up.
But I actually think that is the genius of it. Think about the journey. You have spent the last 5 minutes being incredibly rigid. Do you stock this item? Am I correct in understanding this price?
Well, it's been all business.
It's been entirely business. Saying take care at the very end drops that formal mask for just a split second.
It's like saying, okay, the formal business is completely done. The contract is fulfilled. Now, just human to human, I genuinely hope you are safe out there.
Precisely. It cleverly re-injects humanity into the sort of formal vacuum we just created with all that structure.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you just leave with a cold goodbye, you remain a transaction machine.
Right.
But take care implies a shared community. It acknowledges we are both just people existing in this space together, and I wish you well.
It totally breaks the frame.
It beautifully softens the hard edges of the contract.
So mapping this all out, we've gone from the opening of how can I be of service all the way to the closing of take care. And when you look at it as one whole continuous script, it really is a structured performance.
It's absolute theater. But I'd argue it's incredibly useful theater.
And that's really the big question for me as we wrap this up. Because on one hand, if I strictly use this exact script at my local corner store tomorrow, the guy behind the counter would probably think I was having some kind of episode or practicing lines for a play.
He might be a bit taken aback, sure.
But on the other hand, looking at how modern shopping actually works now, where everyone is just staring down at their phone, wearing noise-canceling headphones, actively avoiding eye contact, just mumbling, maybe we desperately need a script.
I really believe we crave that structure far more than we realize. A lot of the deep anxiety of everyday social interaction comes from simply not knowing what comes next.
Yeah.
You walk up to the counter and you're thinking, does he want to chat? Is she in bad mood? Did I say the wrong thing just now? The Master Architect Guide completely removes all of that ambiguity.
It provides safety rails for the conversation.
Exactly. If I know exactly what phrase to use to enter, exactly how to technically ask for a product, and exactly the right words to leave, I don't have to stress about the social performance anymore. I can just focus on the actual human being standing in front of me.
That is a really counterintuitive but profound idea, that by intentionally being more rigid and robotic with our vocabulary, we can actually be more present with our attention.
Structure creates freedom. By relying on these formal containers, phrases like, may I assist you or I appreciate your help, we are clearly signaling respect. And when people feel respected and safe in the structure, they usually drop their defenses.
You get a better retail outcome, yes, but you also might get a genuine moment of connection. So here is my challenge to everyone listening to this deep dive. You do not have to go out tomorrow and start talking like a Victorian Duke.
Please don't go to the local gas station and ask, am I correct in understanding this single Snickers bar is $2?
Yeah, please don't do that. But maybe just try applying one single piece of this architecture. Next time you need to find something, don't just point and ask, where is it? Ask, could you show me?
See if their posture changes. See if they actually perk up a bit because you've just given them a position of respect to play.
Or just swap out a muttered, thanks for a clear, I appreciate your help. Watch the reaction. It's a tiny data point, but I bet it changes the energy in the room completely.
It's a fascinating experiment in everyday social dynamics. We're all just actors on a stage trying to buy our groceries. We might as well learn the lines that make the play run smoothly.
And ultimately, it asks us to consider a much bigger picture, something we didn't touch on but is worth mulling over. If we start rigidly scripting our commercial interactions to make them smoother, what happens if we apply this formal architecture to our personal relationships? Does extreme formality in how we speak to our partners or family members actually make life easier by removing the emotional guesswork? Or does it completely strip the humanity out of the people we love most?
Now that is a terrifying but brilliant question to ponder next time you're standing in line waiting for your receipt.
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today.
Goodbye.
And in the truest spirit of the Master Architect, take care.